that we are going to move through, and then a public hearing at the end, but we'll start with Senate Bill 103.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 103 increases the annual fee assessed to generators of hazardous waste.
You know the routine. Go right ahead.
Good afternoon, Chair Abaki and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Alan Kippett. I'm the Land Quality Division Administrator for DEQ, and I'm here to testify in support of Senate Bill 103. In 1986, DEQ received approval from the Environmental Protection Agency to run the hazardous waste program in Oregon. And so for over 20 years, we've been running this program. The regulated community has consistently supported DEQ, not EPA, implementing this program. There's obviously a large and diverse mixture of hazardous waste out there. They can be byproducts of manufacturing, simply discarded chemical products such as solvents and paints. And many of these wastes are persistent in the environment, so it's obviously important to make sure that they're managed correctly. We maintain an active program monitoring Oregon's largest hazardous waste generators and three permitted hazardous waste facilities. These 520 businesses generated 114 million pounds of hazardous waste in 2005. Our compliance work focuses on meeting our operating agreement with EPA to inspect a certain number of regulated generators each year and respond to complaints. We also provide extensive education and technical assistance about safe hazardous waste management and toxic use reduction to small businesses. Senate Bill 103 will increase the fees paid by generators of hazardous waste. The annual hazardous waste generation fee will change from $110 to $130 per metric ton, and the cap on this fee will change from $27,500 to $32,500. The expected added fee revenue will maintain 1.65 positions now doing hazardous waste compliance and oversight work. The hazardous waste work at DEQ is funded by a mix of EPA grants, state general funds, annual fees on hazardous waste generators, and a portion of the fee on disposal of hazardous waste at Arlington. These funding sources have been declining for several years, and none has kept pace with the rate of inflation. Our hazardous waste staff of 55 a few years ago is now 40. This is a minimum number needed to operate an adequate hazardous waste compliance and enforcement program in Oregon. That staffing level will also ensure that DEQ maintains its ability to implement this program in lieu of EPA. Without an increase in revenue, DEQ hazardous waste staff will drop to 35 positions in the 2007 and 9 biennium. Senate Bill 103 is an important part of the solution to ensure continuation of an adequate hazardous waste compliance and enforcement program. With that, I urge your support, and thank you for the opportunity to testify and be glad to answer any questions you have.
Very good. Ms. Wiles, why don't you go ahead and testify first, and we'll open up for questions.
I'm sorry. I should have, Chair Vakin, I should have mentioned Wendy Wiles is my hazardous waste manager, works for me, and is here to answer any technical questions that you have that I can't. So I should have mentioned that earlier.
Okay. Lucky for you. Committee? Senator Beyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Is this fee fund the entire program, or is there some general? I see in the background here it says that it's fee, state general funds, and grants fund this program. Is that accurate?
Senator Byers, members of the committee, that is accurate. There's a mixture of funds. We have some general fund in the program that predominantly pays for our technical assistance effort. The fees generated pay for the compliance side of the program.
Could you give me an idea of the breakdown of just by percentages, how much is fees, how much is general fund, and how much are grants? I assume those are probably federal grants.
Right. We have about $1 million in general fund. Wendy, do you know the number of EPA dollars that we have in the program?
EPA is a little less. Senator, excuse me, Senator Beyer, committee members, for the record, my name is Wendy Wiles. We have about $1.7 million from EPA, and our fees are approximately $2.5 million. So that makes up approximately a quarter of our budget.
What makes up approximately
a quarter? Fees.
So you have $1 million general fund, $1.7 million feds, and $2.5 million fees. So it seems to me that...
Sorry. And the remaining money comes from fees that are paid for from the hazardous waste facility in Arlington.
Okay. Okay. Thank you.
Okay, seeing nothing further, thanks to the two of you. We have John Ledger and Catherine Van Natta. Thanks for joining us. Whichever wants to lead off, go right ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. Good afternoon. I'm John Ledger, Associated Oregon Industries, and we'll be very brief. We support this bill. We actually went back. I looked to see when they got their last, and I can't remember the dates, the last increase in fees. And we've never. And when you roll up for CPI, it's very close. And we have never objected to any increases that reflect CPI. And we actually like them to postpone those and catch up later, you know, if we can. And so we encourage them to do that. There was, as I recall, though, and I'm not sure how this happened, some general fund money that was in this program, I think about 10%. That has historically been there and did not get through the governor's budget, and we would very much like to see that piece restored back to the program. I don't know if this would be the place to make that recommendation, but we think that would be worth doing. It's like something we'd like to see. So with that, we certainly have no objections to this whatsoever.
The Ways and Means co-chairs might have an objection to us dumping general fund money in. I don't know, Senator Beyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. John and Catherine both, I guess, either one can answer this question, and I think you probably know what it's going to be, but the way I'm looking at it, this is we have about $1 million general fund, or about 10%, like you said, 1.7. Anyway, about a $10 million program, the way I just did the quick math, of which now $7.5 million of that are fees from either the users or the Arlington facility itself. And at some point in time, it seems to me that we have to have a discussion about, is it still economical to run these programs at the state level if the feds are going to mandate them but not pay for them? And would the regulated industry prefer to go back to have an EPA regulation and not DEQ? And I guess I'd like you to respond to that. If not now, when is the appropriate time? At what point in time, if you go from, you know, right now it's 75% fee-driven, at what point in time is the tipping point where you think it'd be appropriate to get the DEQ out of this business?
Well, Mr. Chairman, Senator Beyer, I think there are really two pieces to that calculation. One, of course, is the cost, and the second is the quality of the program. And if the quality of the program is high, then I think businesses are willing to pay more fees for it. If the quality of the program is poor, then the tolerance for fees drops down. So I can't give you a specific number. We pay a lot of fees, a ton of fees, and more so every year. Programs are rarely given back to the federal government. I think in the history of the nation, air programs were given back once. Proudly, I was working for the agency when that happened. And I got a big, huge raise when the contractor hired me. So it's extraordinarily rare. And as long as the agency is functioning well, we like to see a good balance. I can't give you a specific number.
I guess just to clarify, it's not the time in this program that we will talk about it in other programs as we go forward today.
Mr. Chairman, I believe that's a legitimate discussion.
Thank you.
Senator Bates.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Along those lines, I always felt, and you may disagree with this, but that local regulation, local control is better than something from D.C. I have real fears what the federal government does today or tomorrow. It, as it might say, blows with the wind, and depending who's in power or not in power. This particular agency, DEQ, has a pretty good record of working with industry, and not all states have a DEQ that does that, but this one has a pretty good record of working with industry. And as we go through these debates over these issues, I'd like to keep that in our minds that, you know, we've got something that's working pretty well. Both sides seem to agree to it for the most part, not everywhere. But I'd rather have those discussions and that debate at this level than in Washington, D.C.
Mr. Chair, Senator Bates, I think those are good comments. I will say, you know, I've seen what's happened in other states and agencies in other states. Oregon, far and away, has the best relationship between the business community and the agency. Now, it's not all peaches and light, okay? And we don't argue, and you're going to hear some disagreements today. But I can tell you, in most other states, it's close to scorched earth. And that I think that's something all sides work hard to avoid.
Ms. Van Atta?
Chair Ivakian, members of the committee, for the record, Catherine Van Atta, governmental affairs manager of the Northwest Pulp and Paper Association. A few words about DEQ's hazardous waste program. They have worked closely with the business community in crafting this program and with working on issues like toxics use reduction in work groups and trying to streamline the program and reduce paperwork. And last session, you might recall that we passed Senate Bill 42 that did just exactly that. Reduce paperwork and streamline the program. And we think that this is a nicely functioning program and that the technical assistance that is the DEQ is able to provide small businesses actually does a lot of good to get net environmental improvement on the ground with smaller businesses and companies and manufacturers that might not otherwise have access to the knowledge base of pollution prevention and toxics use reduction and items like that. Whereas the pulp and paper industry is not a large generator of hazardous waste, we still support this program and think that DEQ does do a good job of administering it.
Very good. Committee?
Nothing. Thank you both very much. Is there anybody else that would like to testify but didn't sign up for Senate Bill 103? Seeing none, I'll close the public hearing on Senate Bill 103, open a work session on Senate Bill 103.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Atkinson.
I would move Senate Bill 103 to the floor.
Thank you, Senator. Senator moves, Atkinson moves Senate Bill 103 to the floor.
No.
Are there any objections?
Is that with the due pass recommendation?
Senator Atkinson?
No recommendation.
I'd like to amend the motion.
Senator Pozanski?
I'd like to amend the motion to be a due pass recommendation based on the testimony we've heard today.
We have a motion for an amendment to add a due pass recommendation. Are there any objections to the motion to amend?
I'll object just to be cantankerous.
I thought you might. Senator Beyer, would you like to join the party?
No, that's fine.
No, okay.
I just have to have something to talk to Senator Pozanski about.
Motion on the amendment passes. The motion before us now is to move Senate Bill 103 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Are there any objections, Senator Atkinson?
I'm trying to make the
seeing clear. None. Thank you.
I'm trying to be.
And the carrier will be Senator Atkinson.
All right.
And I will open a public hearing on Senate Bill 104.
Oh, I'll be delighted.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 104 increases annual underground storage tank fee. It removes a sunset on a voluntary program for the assessment and imposition of non-compliance penalties. It increases the penalties under this program. There is an amendment to Senate Bill 104. It's 104-1 that inserts the dollar amounts that were left blank in the original version.
Thank you.
Chair,
if you could go ahead and speak to the amendment and the bill, both.
Okay. Chair Ivakian and members of the committee, for the record, my name is Alan Kippett. I'm Land Quality Division Administrator for DEQ. With me is Wendy Wiles, also the Underground Storage Tank Manager in my group, as well as House Waste. This bill, we have not had a fee increase in this program since 2001. As you know, it's a very large program in terms of number of people that are regulated by this program. We have about 5,600 tanks and over 1,900 facilities. Our goal is to inspect those facilities and ensure that the tanks in those facilities don't leak. That's the primary concern of our program. And as a result of not having fee increases, we're looking for an increase from $85 to $135 per tank, which will pay for the existing 8 positions that we have in this program that conduct inspections and work on the underground storage tank program. Another important aspect of this bill is the expansion of the expedited enforcement or field ticket program that we've used over the last 2 years. It was started out as a pilot project. We are suggesting to mend the legislation to make it a permanent part of the program and expand the range of violations that can be included in a field ticket program. Over the last 2 years, we've issued 225 field tickets and only done 34 formal enforcements in this program with that approach available. So it's been a very successful program, a less expensive way, both in terms of dollars to the regulated community and staff time at DEQ to get compliance. With those comments, I'd like to offer up my thanks for being able to testify and open it up to any questions you might have.
Can you tell us why it, elaborate a little bit more on why it needs to be sunsetted?
Senator Atkinson, members of the committee, why it doesn't need to be sunsetted. We have a sunset in the statute right now.
Why the sunset should be removed?
This is one of those programs that in order to have basically support from EPA to implement the program, which we've been doing for some 20 years, it's hard for EPA to acknowledge that we have a reliable program when there's a sunset clause in the statute that says all the funding and the program could go away. That's why we're suggesting the sunset date be removed.
Committee? Senator Beyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Am I reading this correctly that the penalty portion of these fees go back to the department I'm going to read it from the statute, continuously appropriated to the department for the purpose of providing support to the, and we're getting rid of the word pilot, program technical assistance or operator training or meeting other needs of the department? Is that?
Senator Byers, members of the committee, that is correct. This program does have those fees coming back into the program primarily used for technical assistance.
But when you have the words or other meeting other needs of the department, they can go anywhere in the department, in the DEQ, to be used for whatever?
Senator Byers, members of the committee, that hasn't been the case. I suppose one could loosely interpret it that way, but it's always stayed within the underground storage tank program.
Nothing more than further? Okay, thank you. Paul Romain.
No. We don't put beer in underground storage tanks, don't worry. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm Paul Romain, here representing the Oregon Petroleum Association. We are actually neutral on the bill, but the program is worthwhile. It's a federal mandated program. It's your typical federal mandate to do the program and then no funding for it, so we get stuck with it here. It does benefit more than just tank owners. It's a public benefit. We would prefer if we saw some general fund money in there, but we realize that the train is probably on the track and we're probably going to have to get off the track or get bloody. But DEQ does do a very good job with the program. The sunset was put in there to basically force people to come back and ask for fees. It was intentional back in 2001, if I recall. And the idea was justify the program periodically. Is it still needed? Is it something that you should have out there? But again, the field enforcement is very good. The pilot program has worked. It has cut down on the most expensive portion of it, which is these prolonged kind of enforcement proceedings, if you would. So if you can do field enforcement, it's much better. So we are neutral on the program. We would prefer if you recommended lots of general fund go into it so it didn't have to go from 85 to 135. But again, we are realists also. Thank you.
Senator Beyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Paul, I guess you probably know now the question I'm going to ask you, but it is a federal program. If it was administered by the EPA, there would be no fees charged. And currently $85, asking to go to $135. The CPI amount would have been $115, so we're going, you know, 150% above CPI. At what point in time is industry going to say, you know, enough is enough, and feds either pay for us to enforce your program or take the program back home and enforce it the way you would do it?
Mr. Chair, Senator Beyer, we had that exact discussion this last year, and it's a very legitimate discussion. EPA actually does will take over the program if DEQ is not involved. We have always had a very good relationship with DEQ. As previous speakers have alluded to, DEQ has worked with industry in this state, so you kind of like the devil you know to some degree more than the devil that you don't know. But we have had that debate, I guess the right way to say it is we do not believe that politically that's a legitimate thing to be asking for at this particular time. However, that debate probably should be had at some point.
Follow-up, Mr. Chair. I just caught this for the first time. I would have asked you about it earlier, but the fact that they can use the tickets, the fines for other things besides technical approach, other needs of the department, does that give you any concern? I mean, we've tried to stay away from bounty hunters and departments funding themselves through tickets in this arena, and I just caught this now that this one actually does have the ability to this program to fund whatever they want it to fund inside DEQ.
Mr. Chair, Senator Beyer, it gives you heartache in the abstract. I believe DEQ that they don't use it for other things. And our enforcement proceedings, if you would, or any time we interface with DEQ, they don't seem to be out there headhunting. But it is a very legitimate issue. I did not realize that they could use it for other things, but I feel very confident in their testimony that they don't.
Senator Pozanski.
Thank you. Following up on Senator Beyer's question, Paul, would there be anything that would keep the EPA from setting up some type of fee structure for enforcing the program if it went back under their jurisdiction?
Mr. Chair, Senator Pozanski, I just don't know. I couldn't answer that. Sorry.
Thanks.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Romaine. Oh, Senator Bates.
And just one last comment, I guess, or a question. Mr. Romaine, I have to assume that these fees, in comparison to the total cost of fuel in this day and age, are rather minuscule as far as the entire industry is concerned. Is that correct or incorrect?
Mr. Chair, Senator Bates, it depends on what you're looking at. If you're looking at what an individual station owner
right.
in a small town pays, $135 is a lot of money. The margins that station owners operate on are very thin. Station owners do not make money in this state. It's a very difficult state to make money in. You see stations closing all the time. We are not. It all depends on who, what company that has this underground storage tank. If it happens to be a high profit company, then it's a minuscule amount. But for an individual station owner that may have two or three underground storage tanks. Or more. Maybe you have three grades of gas and a grade of diesel, or maybe now you have two grades of diesel because of mandates on biodiesel coming up or something. You've got a lot of money that goes out. And I know there's one station I know that had well over $1 million in sales, and their profit on the station was $11,000. So it's not a lot of money.
Somebody's making money, but not the station owners.
My clients, unfortunately, are the very are not making any money. When you read the newspaper
gotcha.
Accounts, we're not making money.
So this is important.
Pardon?
This money is important. This is important.
Yes, it's very important.
I understand.
To an individual station
owner.
I'm sorry. I'm getting old and can't hear.
And on that note, I think you're done. Thank you, Mr. Romaine. And is there anybody else who would like to testify on Senate Bill 104? Seeing nobody, then I'll close the public hearing on 104, open a work session on 104, and if I could have a motion on the -1 amendments.
Mr. Chair, just to avoid controversy, I'd like to move Senate Bill 104 to the floor with a do-pass recommendation.
And can I take that as with the dash one amendments?
With the dash one amendments.
Thank you. Yes. Senator Bates moves the dash one amendments into Senate Bill 104 and then moves it as amended to the floor with the do-pass recommendation. Are there any discussion?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I recognize that the industry sounds like they're still supporting this. I do have concerns about the, and I said just caught that. I didn't realize that this is one area that their fines could go into any program department, and I know that we've tried to be very careful and set the precedent that that doesn't happen, and I guess I would like to see this bill amended to have that those four or five words taken out of it. I realize that's not going to happen, so I'm going to vote against it.
Very well. Any other discussion?
I think it's a worthwhile program also, but I don't like the removing the sunset portion. Just as a matter of policy, I think it's good that the legislative branch has an update.
Very good. Any objections then? Senator Beyer?
Yes.
And Senator Atkinson? And seeing none others then, the motion carries. And Carrier, please.
I'll do it.
Senator Posansky to carry. Thank you, Senator. And I'll open up a public hearing on Senate Bill 105.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 105 increases fees assessed on certain vessels and on offshore and onshore facilities for certain programs related to oil spills. Specifies that fees for non-propelled tank vessels are based on capacity. It declares an emergency and is effective on passage. And for your information, there are amendments that you should have that actually decreases the fees that were originally presented in the bill and adds a provision for DEQ to report annually on their fees based on their programs to assure that the fees are in a line with the programs that are being served.
Chair Vakian, members of the committee, for the record, again, my name is Alan Kippett, Land Quality Division Administrator for DEQ. With me is Mike Zalich, one of the senior staff people in our emergency response and spill planning program. I would like to say that in supporting this bill, what we have done is work closely with the industry. It's a relatively small program staff-wise at DEQ. There have not been any fee increases for some time. I think 2001 was the last date. And as noted by the committee administrator, we had had some conversations and put fee increase numbers in there previously. Upon further conversations with the regulated community, we reduced the amount of those fees that are now in front of you. Another factor that should be mentioned here, because we are uncertain of LNG facilities and vessels, and have plugged that into the equation, that was one of the reasons we've added the new reporting section so that we come to the legislature and let you know what the revenue forecast is looking like in this program and whether or not the fees need to be adjusted. We also included liquefied natural gas or LNG facilities and vessels in this program as well. It's a fairly important program. We don't want to have vessel spills in our waters, and we have a minimum staffing program, so I think the fee increases cover that well. If you have any questions, I'd be glad to answer them.
Very good. Committee? Senator Atkinson.
Question for the committee. So we're looking at the hand engrossed, is that right?
Or the dash ones.
You have the dash ones.
Dash one.
I got an extra.
I don't seem to have those. Thank you very much.
While the senator gets a chance to look those over, Mr. Zolich, do you have anything to add, or are you here just to help Mr. Kippett if he needs it?
Chair Bakken and members of the committee, I'm here to answer any technical questions.
Nicely done. Senator, are you ready?
Thank you. That was nice. Looking at the amendments, help me where we're increasing fees here. Because I don't want to overstate the obvious, but
they're on the first page, lines 1 through 8.
Yeah. 7. delete 7,000 and...
But they were set previously in the bill to go up higher than what they agreed to with industry, so industry dropped them, asked DEQ to drop them down, and they did.
Okay.
So instead of filling up the blanks, we're just changing the numbers.
It's a government, actually, fee decrease.
Yeah. This is a good bill.
I'm having a hard time here.
I can't land it.
And where's the... And so the only place LNG is on page 4, line 15? You said there's a definition of LNG, or is it just added to the bill?
Mr. Kippett, could you clarify?
Senator Atkinson, members of the committee, yes, it's just adding liquefied natural gas to the definition number 18 on page 4. And while it may not be clear here in the dash one amendments, the original fees that we're looking at, for example, say for cargo and passenger vessels, were $48. We initially looked at raising them to 85, but then backed off to 70. So while it looks like all these are decreases, they are decreases from an initially proposed increase, if that makes sense.
Oh, in government it makes perfect sense.
This is the one you should carry.
Holy mackerel. I might even give this a due pass.
Yeah.
Committee, any questions? Seeing none. Liz Wozenry and Jim Townley.
Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, for the record, my name is Liz Wainwright, W-A-I-N-W-R-I-G-H-T.
Did a very poor job with that.
My mother as a teacher would be very embarrassed. I am the executive director for the Maritime Fire and Safety Association. I'm here today in support of Senate Bill 105, the amended 105-1, the Oregon Spill Prevention and Contingency Planning Bill. Very briefly, Maritime Fire and Safety Association is a not-for-profit cooperative of whose members are the public ports and private terminals located on the Lower Columbia and Willamette Rivers, and whose customers are the deep draft covered vessels noted in the bill. MFSA, through the fees that we assess and are voluntarily paid by the vessels, provide funding to maintain a communication system from Portland to Astoria that is used by the marine transportation community and the fire agencies located along the river, financial support to land-based firefighters to train and provide specialized equipment to respond to shipboard fires, and lastly, provide a state-approved umbrella oil spill contingency plan with over $3 million in response equipment and response personnel, which ensures a timely and effective response to a marine oil spill. The umbrella oil spill contingency plan is approved by DEQ, and as such, we are an industry stakeholder and partner with DEQ and their marine spill prevention program. As a plan holder, we conduct drills and exercises in which DEQ staff participates. In turn, DEQ staff participates in the Maritime Fire and Safety Association Oil Spill Prevention and Response Committee, which brings together both public and private stakeholders on a regular basis. Ongoing participation is critical to the success of these programs. Over the last several months, we have worked with DEQ staff and the Columbia River Steamship Operators to refine the details of this bill to enable that there is an effective level of service and that it continues. We are especially pleased that this bill establishes an annual reporting requirement for review and evaluation of the program. The marine transportation community remains committed to its environmental responsibilities, and Senate Bill 105 gives DEQ and its stakeholder partners the ability to continue the program, the functions of the program. Thank you very much for allowing me to testify. I can make my testimony available later, and if you have any questions.
Very good. Thank you. Any questions? None. Mr. Townley, then?
I'm Jim Townley, Executive Director of the Columbia River Steamship Operators Association, one of the groups that Liz Wainwright mentioned as providing the fees for the service. I'm here to testify in full support of Senate Bill 105 and answer any questions that you might have.
Thank you. Senator Beyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I probably should ask this question of DEQ, but currently, if you talk about Portland Harbor, we already have an issue of the fact that the Columbia River isn't deep enough all the way yet to get the big draft, what do they call them, deep draft vessels in. I'm curious to know how these fees compare to the fees of the other harbors, such as, you know, Seattle, Long Beach, and California. If you know the answer to that, again, I probably should ask DEQ to question that question.
Our rates are very competitive. So we feel some of the earlier testimony given here on other House bills could parrot the same words. The quality of the service really matters. And we've had great success in working with our DEQ counterparts on engineering what we consider probably one of the most exemplary programs in the nation, which keeps our costs down, our quality up, and is part of the reason why we're strongly supportive of the bill as proposed.
So you don't feel this fee increase will help or will hurt specifically the ports on the Columbia River that have to come up and, you know, they can't bring the, or they can't be fully loaded or can't bring the deep draft vessels in because the river isn't deep enough? I know that's already put them at a competitive disadvantage with some of these other deep water ports. And this fee increase won't make them less competitive.
No, not at all. It's two different features that are being discussed here. One has to do with the strict volumes of cargoes that are carried by ships. Deeper drafts mean more volume for pretty mm-hmm. much the same cost. Some of the confusion that was raised by the bill in earlier discussion about the reduction, for example, from 85 to 70, the river system has suffered from a decline in vessel calls over the last 5 to 10 years, and that resulted in less fees being collected by DEQ from the previous agreement that we had. This meant that the fixed costs of the Environmental Safety Program, as well as other services provided for maritime commerce, had to be socialized across a smaller number of vessels. When we sat down with DEQ this time and looked at the $85, what we had recognized with the Port of Portland, other Washington State ports, upriver ports, and other entities have been working very, very diligently over the last couple of years to try and turn the dynamic around and attract more volumes to the river, and it appears to be paying off. So our concern was over the next 6 years, if we actually succeed in bringing more volumes up, we'd have more money, and we looked than we were planning in budgeting with our partners in DEQ. And so the numbers reflected downward are actually a reflection of our hopes, and what we're actually experiencing now is an increase in the number of ships coming to our ports here on the Columbia River.
One more, Mr. Chair. If a ship, does every ship coming in the Columbia River pay these, or only if they go to an Oregon port?
And all ships pay.
That raise another one. So is there a corresponding fee in Washington that the same ship has to pay a fee both for Oregon and Washington?
They would pay a fee if they were going to Puget Sound. The fee that is collected by DEQ applies to any vessel coming into the Columbia River.
Okay.
The plan that I spoke about is approved by both by the state of Oregon and the state of Washington.
Okay. Very good. Ms. Wainwright, Ms. Townley, appreciate your testimony very much. Thank you.
Thank you.
Is there anybody else who would like to testify on Senate Bill 105? Seeing none, I'll close the public hearing on Senate Bill 105. I'll open a work session on Senate Bill 105. If I could have a motion on the Dash 1 amendments, please.
Mr. Chair, I'd move the Dash 1 amendments to Senate Bill 105.
Thank you. Senator Atkinson moves the Dash 1 amendments to Senate Bill 105. Are there any objections? Seeing none, the Dash 1s are accepted. And a motion on the bill?
Mr. Chair, I'd move Senate Bill 105 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Thank you very much, Senator. Senator Atkinson moves to the Senate Bill 105 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion or any objections? Seeing none, so moved. And a carrier? So ordered. Senator Beyer, thank you very much. And with that, I will open up a public hearing on Senate Bill 106.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 106 increases filing fee for request of certification of heating oil tank decommissioning. It increases the filing fee for request of certification of heating oil tank corrective action, declares an emergency, and is effective on passage. There are amendments as well to this bill that fills in numbers that were left blank in the original draft.
Thank you, Sue. Mr. Kippett?
Chair Vaki and members of the committee, for the record, my name is Alan Kippett, Land Quality Administrator for DEQ. With me, I have Judy Kaufman, who's the Acting Manager for the Heating Oil Tank Program for DEQ. to answer any technical questions that you throw my way that I can't answer. This legislation is to raise fees in the heating oil tank program. What our program is designed to do is review reports, inspect service providers that provide services to homeowners when they have underground heating oil tanks either decommissioned in place or removed, or there's a cleanup activity associated at the house. One of the problems that we've run into over the past several years, because we have a huge load of these kinds of activities going on, about 2,500 reports per year coming in the door, is we have not been able to audit heating oil contractors as well as we would have liked. And we have had some instances of fraudulent behavior by these contractors. So this is really designed to be a consumer protection bill. We need to have one additional resource at DEQ that can really help focus our efforts on auditing and inspecting service provider activities to avoid fraudulent behavior by contractors. With that, I'll open it up to any questions you might have.
None? Thank you. Paul Romaine?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm Paul Romaine. I got to get my name right. Representing the Oregon Petroleum Association, we are in favor of the bill. It's a pass-through to customer. They provide a very good service, and it's necessary.
Very good. Thank you, Mr. Romaine. Anybody else want to testify on Senate Bill 106? Seeing nobody else, I'll close the public hearing, and I'll open a work session on Senate Bill 106. If I could have a motion on the amendment.
Mr. Chair, I'd move the Dash 1 amendments to Senate Bill 106.
Senator Bates moves Dash 1 amendments to Senate Bill 106. Are there any objections? Seeing none, so ordered, and a motion on the bill.
Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 106 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
And Senator Bates moves Senate Bill 106 to the floor with due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Senator Beyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to say that prior to the program being administered in this manner, I received a lot of complaints about the program and about when DEQ was directly assessing the fees to homeowners to have them clean up, to inspect the tanks being cleaned up. I think this was implemented in about 2001 session, maybe 99 session, somewhere in that arena. Prior to that, I was getting a lot of complaints from homeowners feeling that DEQ fees were, you know, exorbitant and just a hold up to the whole process, having a DEQ person come out and inspect the process. Since this program has gone into effect where the contractors are, you know, I guess, deputized, so to speak, to do the cleanup and certify it's done correctly and pass the fees on to the homeowners and give it and pay to DEQ, it's worked a lot better, and I've received relatively few, if any, complaints since then. So I think this is a good program.
Very good. Thank you. Are there any objections? Seeing none, so ordered. Senator Bates, would you carry this one?
I'd be glad to, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. With that, I'll open the public hearing on Senate Bill 107.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 107 increases the emission fee and the base fee for pollutants from major sources of air pollution, clarifies the definition of regulated pollutant, declares an emergency, and is effective on passage.
Welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, I'm Stephanie Halleck. I'm the Director of the Department of Environmental Quality. With me today is Andy Ginsberg, who is the Administrator of the Air Quality Program. I'm here for two purposes. First of all, to thank you on your earlier action on the earlier bills, and also to clarify that I'm not here to provide technical support to Andy. I am simply here to handle any tough questions that you have for the Director. And with that, I will turn it over to him to describe this bill to you.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Andrew Ginsberg. I'm the Air Quality Administrator for the Department of Environmental Quality, and I'm here to provide information and support for Senate Bill 107. Federal law requires the largest industrial facilities in Oregon to have Title V permits. We call them Title V because it's Title V of the Clean Air Act It was adopted in 1990, and the Oregon legislature adopted the program in 1991, authorizing DEQ to implement it. The purpose of this program is to achieve a high level of compliance with air quality standards at our largest industrial facilities, and it contributes to progress in meeting our benchmarks from the Oregon Progress Board, benchmark number 75 to reduce the number of unhealthy days when the air is unhealthy, and benchmark number 6 to reduce the risk from toxic air pollution. Federal law requires the program to be fully funded with fees, and it also requires that the fees be sufficient to cover all of the reasonable direct and indirect costs of the program. Historically, we've funded the program at a level of 36 positions, and that has been adequate to handle the permitting and the inspections, the technical administration, and administer the program. It hasn't been a Cadillac program, but it has been adequate. However, in the past few years, the revenue has not kept up with costs, and in this current biennium, we were forced to cut 3 positions from the program. Now, for the first time since the inception of the program, we're building up a backlog in permitting, and we're falling behind on inspections. In fact, we have 25% of our permits expired. We're also finding it increasingly difficult to meet the needs of the permittees, of the public, and EPA in administering the program. Without a fee increase, we will have to cut an additional 1.5 positions from the program for next biennium, and at that level, we really would not be able to effectively administer the program. We would experience more expired permits. We would have more delays for companies that need to make changes in their permits, and we would be less responsive to the public. We would be subject to audits from the Environmental Protection Agency, and if the situation went on long enough, ultimately we could lose federal approval of the program and have a federally imposed program. In preparing for Senate Bill 107, we conducted a very thorough workload analysis to determine exactly how many positions do we need to run this program adequately. We looked at every step that we take to implement the program. We looked at how many times we take those steps. We took into account all the streamlining we've done since 2001, and the result is that we need 35 positions to implement this program. That would be one less than the historical level. Then we compared ourselves to other states to see whether our level of staffing was similar, and we found that our program is just about at the average for other similar types of states. And I gave some examples in my written testimony of that. The Title V fee is set in statute, and the fee may be increased by up to the amount the Consumer Price Index increases. The fee has 3 parts. There's an emission fee, which is charged per ton of emissions. There's a base fee, which is charged for each permit, and then there are some special fees for things like modifications. Most of the revenue, 90%, comes from the emission fee, and then most of the rest of the revenue comes from the base fee. In preparing Senate Bill 107 to cover the cost of 35 positions and to true up the fee to cover those costs, we would have to increase the fee by 24%. The actual dollar increase that an individual company would see would depend on their level of emissions. The smaller the emissions, the lower the fee increase, obviously. And again, I gave examples of that in my written testimony. Currently, most of the Title V sources, about 60%, are what we call in the medium category. So in conclusion, the purpose of this bill is to fund the program at 35 positions. That's what we think is the level to adequately implement the program. And we have, oh, and one other thing is that the restored positions will all be targeted towards permitting, or except with the exception of one half position, which is to train permit writers. And so they will be focusing on getting rid of that backlog and increasing service to the regulated community. With that, I'd be happy to answer any questions that you may have.
No questions? Ms. Halleck, Mr. Ginsburg, thank you very much. John Ledger, Catherine Van Atta.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, this is actually going to be one of the rare times you see us disagreeing with the DEQ. We're very supportive of them. Oh, I'm John Ledger. We are supporting a 7% increase in their water discharge fees this session. We're supporting, I think it's about a 20 or 22% increase in their air smaller source air fees this session because they haven't had an increase in quite some time.
Thank you.
We're supporting the governor's water quality monitoring program. If it's done right, that'd be something we'd like to see. This is different, though, for a couple of reasons, and I'll go through them briefly. And one of the things I want you to bear in mind is we pay for the entire program, and if the program doesn't function well, we're the ones who are hurt. We're the ones that don't get our renewals done on time. We're the ones that don't get our modifications done on time. Money. We pay for the whole program. We bear the good and bad of the program. We're interested in a good program. A couple of things that are different about this bill. First of all, you have never seen this bill or one like it before. And the reason is because the DEQ fees have always gone up automatically in this program every single year since 1995. It's fixed to CPI. There was one year where it wasn't increased, so the following year it was doubled, which is fine with us. This is not a languishing program. This is a program that has 12 years of fee increases. If you do not pass this bill, here's what will happen. The fees will go up because it's connected to CPI. If you do not pass this bill, next year, next biennium, they will collect an additional, approximately, if everything stays the same, $211,000 for their program if you do nothing. If you do nothing, 08-09, they will have collected, compared to now, an additional $434,000 if you do nothing. If you do nothing with this bill, in the biennium 09-10, they will be bringing back an additional $670,000 more than they're getting now. This is not a static program. The fees are going to go up regardless. Our air committee at AOI, and when you look at the people who are regulated by this, the bulk are AOI, pulp and paper metals by far, looked at this very hard. We met with Andy numerous times, and there was just a solid consensus. This is something that's not in the cards right now. The fees are pretty substantial, and we didn't see a need for them at this point. You heard Andy say that their staffing's about average for the nation. Well, I think DEQ staffing being about average is actually pretty good because I think they're actually more efficient than most. I think Andy went through streamlining some years ago, and I actually do believe they do more with less. And average staffing is certainly fine with us, and we're the ones who pay for it. Some of the fees, I'm not going to name off the names of the companies, but to give you an idea. Some of them are pretty small. Some of them are larger. Here's a paper company. They're going to be paying about $62,000 every year. And this is just to hold the permit. If they want it modified or expanded, they pay on top of that. So they'll be paying $62,000 a year. That's up about $12,000. Here's another one, right? They'll be paying, under this bill, $92,000 a year. It'll be indexed. Every year after that, it'll go up. So that's a bump for them of $18,000 a year. Here's another one, a newsprint company. They'll be paying about $168,000 a year. Every year, it'll index, go up every year. That's a bump of about $36,000. Here's another one. They'll be paying $256,000 to start. It'll go up every year. It's a bump of about $50,000. Here's $275,000, going up $50,000, $418,000 a year just to hold the permit, going up $81,000 a year to begin, and then CPI'd every year after that. So this increase just isn't one time. It carries forward forever. So I mentioned before that we work closely with the DEQ, and we'd like to continue to do that. And I would like very much, and we've been doing some discussions with them on this, to reach some type of an accommodation and be as cooperative as we can on this. We don't think we can buy off on this as it is. It doesn't mean we're not willing to talk, and it might take a little bit of time. But I just want you to bear in mind, we're looking at about 102 companies. You know, some have more than one permit. The amount of money this raises is not the total amount of money that will be taken out of the industrial sector because it does not count the facilities operating in Lane County Regional Air Pollution Authority. Those will be paying several hundreds of thousand dollars also when this fee is applied to them. So this is partial. And I just want you to remember, we're paying for it. We're happy to work with them. We're the ones that benefit from this program, and we hope we can keep talking with them and come up with a good solution.
Thank you. Ms. Van Adel, why don't you go, and then we'll take questions.
Chair Avakian, members of the committee, for the record, Catherine Van Adel, Northwest Pulp and Paper Association. I've handed to you some rulemaking comments that I submitted on March 31st on the annual CPI inflation factor. I thought that you would be interested as a committee that Northwest Pulp and Paper, through the years since this fee's inception in 1995, usually always comments in support of the CPI inflation factor fee increase and asks for a accounting of the program, trying to understand where the dollars go, how they're allocated, what they're spent on, and trying to make sure that the program is efficient and effective as possible for our admittedly large fees that our industry does pay as large employers and large users of the airshed in the state, which we do feel is appropriate. You'll see in here that and I even put it in the rulemaking record that NWPPA believes the Title V program delivers excellent service, and we hope this historic trend continues. You must realize that to write a Title V permit that you need someone with an engineering background to do it, and that finding someone with an engineering background that can talk engineer to other engineers is a necessity when you're writing these permits, because a Title V fee could be 180 pages thick or more with all emission requirements that we have to monitor and report on and make sure that we comply with. So it is complicated, and what I have enclosed in the back of my testimony is the response that I received for the department categorizing the answers to my questions that you see on page 2 of my March 31st rulemaking comments, where we asked the department, and they replied to me July 26th about issues like how much money has come in, how many permits were on file each year, the numbers of modifications, and total revenue, total number of FTE that were held open during that time for each of those biennia, and how it divides up and how many FTE they did cut in the 2003-2000 time frame. I think that these questions are important and this background is important for the committee as we address the questions of why is this fee increase needed? What will this fee increase be used for? And what type of a performance measure will be attached to this fee increase as it will be, have a CPI inflation factor added to it in the future? And you have to ask yourself, are we going to have more Title V fee payers in this state, or are we just going to go forward as we are? And those are questions that we would like to consider as we go forward. We are willing to work with the department and try to address these questions. We do like the fact that the department has said that this fee increase will be used for permit riders. That wasn't our understanding before of what was going to be done with the money. We do appreciate that it will be used for permit riders and permit riding training, and we think that you might be interested in examining the amount of permit riders versus other uses in the program, and that you might find that data interesting if you were to request it from the DEQ.
Committee? Senator Beyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And either one or both of you could answer. Again, I'd like to talk about the issue, and I don't know if this, the first question is this program even eligible to go back to the EPA to monitor? Does this have to be done at the state?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Beyer, I used to run air programs in another state. I had Mr. Ginsburg's job, and thankfully I'm no longer doing that. It was very difficult. I can tell you that it can go back. The chances of one state has done it. The chances of it being revoked by EPA, I would say, is somewhere between zero and nil. The EPA, their program is in no danger of being revoked whatsoever. And if it were, if that were ever to happen, it would take years to do it.
If it was to go back, would they charge the same fees, or how would they pay for the program?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Beyer, all I can tell you is when that happened in another state, they did not charge fees. They hired a contractor and ran the thing. But under the Clean Air Act, I think fees are required to run this program, so they might just do it that way. The answer is maybe.
Which state sent it back?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Beyer, that was Idaho. Under when Cecil Andrus was there, they zero-funded the air program for a year. And we all went off and did other things and then came back later.
So Idaho's doing it at the state level now again?
Yeah, it only lasted a year.
Okay, thank you.
Any other questions, committee?
Mr. Chair, real quickly.
Senator Bates.
We've seen, four or five bills a day come through with consensus that haven't been reached with DEQ, but apparently in this case, consensus was not reached. How long were those discussions going on?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Bates, in some cases, a minute.
How about this bill?
Literally. This one, there has been a lot of presentations to us. There has been a fairly limited amount of conversations between us and DEQ. That started about 2 weeks ago, and I would like to see it pick up.
Mr. Chair, I'm support you obviously on this, but I would point out this is a bicameral legislature. You will have another bite at the apple, I believe, and I would love to see a consensus built if possible.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Bates, let me just throw this out for what it's worth. I think were that to come about, this committee would be the best chance for something coming out that both parties feel pleased about. I think this bill has the potential to be a bruiser. And I think given the makeup of this committee, and it's relatively early on in the session, my hope would be that it could be resolved within this committee.
Any other questions?
Question.
Senator Pozanski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. John, reading through the DEQ's testimony on the second page, it talks about at this level, talking about the FTE reducing it down. We heard that at this point they feel they're not able to complete the permit process, and it appears that there are out-of-date permits now and the number would increase. If that's so, what does that mean? Does that just mean that there some companies could be out of compliance with the...
Mr. Chairman, Senator Pozanski, when I've talked to my members, there has not been a lot of complaining about that, about being late. Now, on a permit, usually that would be like a modification. If that were slow, then you have to wait to get your permit till you do the modification. So I can tell you, if our companies were being hurt by this taking a long time, or if that occurs, they will be pounding on the door. Because they are the one, this is a thing where they pay for performance of the DEQ. And if they feel like their permits are coming through slowly, or there's not enough staff to do them, it's our members who suffer the consequence of that. I mean, it's just direct, one-to-one. And they were very clear at our air committee meeting, which was substantial, that this was something they not wanted to see. And they understood all the dynamics of it perfectly.
Okay. Thank you, committee. Thanks, both of you. Appreciate your comments about the confidence in committee, Mr. Ledger. Very gracious of you. Ralph Groner.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name for the record is Ralph Groner with the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees. So that I have my conflict of interest, the employees of DEQ are members of one of my locals, and I'm very proud of that local and the work they do. I'm here to support Senate Bill 107, and I also respect John very much because we try to work cooperatively together, and he's already supporting our clean air initiative on a number of bills. This is part of the Oregon Clean Air Initiative, and you've heard someone say they're willing to work with you. I'm from a union that's used to negotiating, so it's not a bad word to us. I would say, however, that I read, and it needs to be very clear, that an effective Title V program helps reduce the number of unhealthy air days, that's what it's really about, and reduce risk from toxic air pollution. So I guess the question in Oregon is, I remember when I had DEQ as a young legislator in 73, 75, if you wanted to look at the general fund contribution of DEQ then, you'll find that it was, I don't know, I mean, 90%, something like that. In the meantime, along came a bunch of ballot measures. I don't commenting on those, but the money had to go for other purposes, K-12, etc. So we've gone from a high general fund agency to what most agencies at the city, county have had to do, and the state, is fund by fees because of the 50% the ballot measures are taking from the general fund by the public, are directing. So I don't know. I don't have the answer. I just read at the end, if we have 31.5 FTE as compared to 35, then the quote is, we will not be able to effectively administer the program. And that's what you have to decide, and you will. What's effective? What do we have to do to be there? Because if we can't effectively administer the program, my number one concern on about 10 bills, two budgets, energy, and this one is clean air for health reasons, which I won't get in front of in this committee. That would be in front of the health committee. My data is coming in to me shortly on what the total package we're looking at reduced in health care costs to Oregonians, and my negotiating health care costs at the bargaining table. We not only have to look at what Senator Bates and the Senate is looking at, but we have to look at environmental health issues. And although this isn't the major issue, you have some of those coming in front of you. This is certainly an important part of it. So I'm not being hardball. I'm a decent guy. I would like to see John Ledger and DEQ and all of you work out a reasonable bill that allows them to run an effective program.
Very good. Any questions? None. Thank you, Mr. Groner.
Thank you.
And last up, Jeremiah Bauman.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Jeremiah Bauman. I'm an environmental advocate with the Oregon State Public Interest Research Group, or OSPIRG. I'll speak just very briefly today in support of Senate Bill 107. I don't have to tell members of this committee that clean air is one of the most important environmental goals for Oregon. And while we've long benefited from some of the cleaner air compared to a lot of areas in this country, that's certainly not universally true in this state. We've seen a lot of air pollution problems, particularly in the Rogue Valley, currently in the Columbia Gorge, parts of Lane County that suffer from inversions. And certainly, there's certainly a lot of Oregonians who understand the important implications of air pollution. I think that one place that all parties agree here is that it's important that the air pollution programs, and most pollution programs, in fact, be paid for by those who are polluting. The polluter pays principle that's been talked about for decades now. This not only is good for protecting general fund revenues, but it's also good for putting the incentive where it appropriately lies and having fees for receiving pollution permits tied to the amount of pollution being released. We do strongly think that the program needs increased staffing. While a backlog in permitting may not cause a big problem for the facility that holds the permit, it does cause a problem for the procedures set up by the Clean Air Act to protect our air. The point of renewing permits is to review permitted pollution levels, check whether those are appropriate, and consider whether they need to be revised in either direction. So it's important that DEQ be able to stay on top of these permits and get those and keep them up to date. In addition, we think there are other places that need resources, such as enforcing these permits. It's hard to make sure permits are adequately enforced when we can't even keep the permits themselves up to date. So we strongly support increasing these fees. I'll also just note for the record that, in my understanding, is a big reason that we need a faster increase this biennium than the consumer price index is simply that, as I probably don't have to tell members of this committee, many costs that contribute to state agency costs, primarily health care, are rising substantially faster than consumer price index rises. Federal law requires that the full costs to administer the program be borne by these fees, And so I believe the requested fee is necessary. With that, I'll end and thank the committee very much for the opportunity to testify.
Thank you, Mr. Bauman. Any questions, committee? None? Anybody else here would like to testify on Senate Bill 107? Seeing none, I will close the public hearing on Senate Bill 107. I'm going to open a work session on Senate Bill 107, and if I could have a motion.
Mr. Chair, I'll move Senate Bill 107 to the floor of the due pass recommendation.
Thank you, Senator Prezansky. Move Senate Bill 107 to the floor of the due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion?
Mr. Chair.
Senator Atkinson.
Two quick points of discussion. I don't really have a dog in this fight. Procedural-wise, I wish we had the opportunity just to, and I like pressure, send them out in the room for a couple, 3 days, 4 days, and come back and see what we can have done. So on just on procedure alone and my love of pressure, I'll be voting no. I'll reserve how I vote on the floor. But I also want to say, after a member of this committee since 1999, that I first met the current director of this agency over a very difficult issue of a storage tank in Eastern Oregon. And over her tenure, I think it this whole committee should note that the presentation that we saw today, I think, is the very height of professionalism. I have seen lots of committees or agency presentations over the years over fee bills and whatnot, but we had a succinct professional piece of paper, succinct professional testimony, and succinct professional expert witnesses on all these five bills. And for me, that's should go with some notice and I think gratitude by the committee. We don't get to see that every day.
Thank you, Senator. Senator Beyer?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll be voting against the motion. I think if given time, these two competing interests could work this out. And we're scheduled for June 29th, sunny die. I hope it happens. I'm very skeptical that it will. I hope it does. But it's only the days of February. We weren't even moving bills on the floor for another month. It seems to me there'd be time to send these groups out into the back room someplace and let them hash it out for as long as it takes, quite frankly, because a bill of this magnitude, we could get a very good product out of it that everyone would agree with. And unfortunately, going to be voting no, but I think it's, I guess, like Senator Bates said, hasn't said yet that he hopes he has a chance to vote on a consensus bill when it comes back from the House. I don't believe in sending flawed legislation, hoping to see it again later. So I'm going to vote no.
Very good, Senator. I would add to both of your comments, which I appreciate very much, that not every bill, even if it appears to be a simple fee bill, is as simple as it seems. And I know that the agency and the other parties that testified have been in discussions for a week, maybe 2 weeks, on the topic, and that there are times when you just have differing points of view, and that's the beauty of the democracy we have, is that eventually somebody has to make a decision about it. And I would always encourage the parties to continue talking, but by virtue of the process we have, we are a decision-making body, which we will do today. But given that, I appreciate the communication between the folks who are interested in the bill, and I appreciate the comments from the senators at the dais. Senator Prezansky moves Senate Bill 107 to the floor with due pass recommendation. Are there any objections?
Yes.
Senator Beyer objects. Senator Atkinson objects. And the motion carries. The chair will carry the bill. And with that, we have one left on our docket for today, Senate Bill 234, and I will open a public hearing on Senate Bill 234.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 234 authorizes the State Director of Agriculture and an appointee from the Director of Human Services to enter into memoranda of agreement and other intergovernmental agreements to further collaboration between the state and federal agencies and to increase state input regarding biopharmaceutical crop issues and requirements of specific interest to the state.
All I'll take Lisa Hansen, Jim Rue, and Gail Shibley all together if you don't mind coming up together.
Mr. Chair, just very quickly, for the record, I'm Gail Shibley with Public Health. I also want to state that Dr. David Stone is behind me in an attached chair that can't make its way up here, but he's also available here at the desk.
Before you start, too, we have two other folks that that would like to testify. I do want to make sure that they get in and we complete the public hearing today. So if you could keep your comments relatively brief so we're done by 4:30.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, I'm Lisa Hansen, the Deputy Director with the Department of Agriculture, and we will work to keep our comments brief so that you can finish by four. Just as background for this bill, last session legislation was introduced that proposed a moratorium on the production of biopharmaceutical crops in Oregon. That bill remained in committee upon adjournment of the 205 legislative session. And as a result of that, the governor and the Senate worked to appoint a work group that met for much of 2006 to discuss issues surrounding the production and permitting of biopharma crops. The committee's work ultimately ended up in a report that is attached to the testimony that we've provided you. I'm not going to go into that report in detail. You can look through it. The legislation that is proposed in Senate Bill 234 captures some of the recommendations that that committee made where the agencies needed additional authority to work with USDA in their permitting process. For those of you who are not familiar with the process, USDA Biotech Regulatory Services provides the regulatory framework for permitting and the release of bioengineered crops. Biopharmaceuticals are one of those. Specifically, Senate Bill 234 would authorize ODA and a representative from the Department of Human Services to enter into a memorandum of understanding with USDA to participate fully in the permitting process. It would give additional authority that's necessary to allow the state to hold certain confidential business information as deemed confidential by USDA, exempt from the Public Records Act, and it would allow the state to charge up to $10,000 in a permitting fee to cover the cost of monitoring and participating in this process. With that, I would also mention that we have been working on some proposed amendments with stakeholders to the language on confidentiality, and we have a few issues that we need to continue to work out in terms of the authority to charge the $10,000 permitting fee. But we're very close and have had a very open process that we've worked through. And so with that, I would ask that Jim and Gail provide additional information, then we'd open it up for questions.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'll be very brief and actually maybe a good setup for the chair. I mostly just want to say
know you're Ms. Shibley.
I'm sorry. Gail Shibley, Administrator of Environmental Public Health, Public Health Division, Department of Human Services. Apologize. The public health, this is a great example of agencies connecting across missions, across commissions to focus on an issue that has impact and import that goes beyond their individual areas. And so it was a terrific process, and the Public Health Board, the Board of Agriculture, along with scientists from both Portland State University and Oregon State University, and I just want to say a particular note for the citizen volunteers who worked very diligently and very assiduously during this time and really came out with, I think, both substance as well as process that really offers the best that we can provide. And I think that if with some additional time we can tweak the specific language in Senate Bill 234 to fully comport with the consensus that we have on the committee.
Mr. Mr. Rue?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Jim Rue. I'm a member of the State Board of Agriculture and chair of this committee. I simply await your questions.
And are there any? Senator Breyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just to make sure it's on the record, and I apologize I missed the first part of testimony. You may have said it, but my concern is that there's nothing in this legislation that would prohibit a biofarm crop from being grown in Oregon as long as the parties all work together and get agreement from both the federal agencies and your agencies.
Mr. Chair, Senator Beyer, you are correct. This sets up a framework for the state to participate fully in that permitting and regulatory process so that the state provides input into the process, but ultimately USDA continues to have the authority to regulate biopharma crops.
Thank you. Senator Pozanski?
Thank you. And in meeting with one of the citizen advocates, they brought to my attention some stuff that they had been working on, I guess, titled Implementation of Oregon's Biofarm Ad Hoc Committee's Recommendations and Draft. I'm not sure if you've seen that or not. It's just a one-hand page out. If not, I can get it to you. But I guess one of the questions that came up during that discussion is regarding control areas. And whether or not the definition that's currently in ORS 570.405 is inclusive to really deal with the biofarm issues. Specifically, it appears from my quick review, it does not have anything in there about health or environment. And I'd ask you all to look at that during your reviews to determine whether or not that section needs to be amended to include that, because currently it doesn't appear to take in consideration health of both human and animal or the environment. And if we're looking at having this type of, operations in the state, it seems like we want to make certain we have an inclusive definition in the control areas to properly ensure safety for all.
Very good. Thank you, Senator. And why don't I call Terry Witt and Rick North? Mr. Witt, whenever you're ready.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'll be very brief. My name is Terry Witt, Director of Oregonians for Food and Shelter. I'm here today testifying both on its behalf and also BIO, the Biotechnology Industry Organization. My testimony is about four pages long with several pages of background and just some additional information in terms of some of the areas where the therapeutic applications of man-made pharmaceuticals are working right now to see the potential benefit that society may achieve and have access to thanks to this technology. I'll make it very brief. I had attended, I think, all but one of the ad hoc committee meetings that were held here in Salem and Portland, and I first want to just commend the ad hoc committee for the work they did. They really put a great effort into it, both at the meeting and doing their homework, especially since many of them had a very limited initial knowledge of biopharmaceutical type operations, and they brought in a variety of technical experts from all sides of the issue and had a very healthy debate, and I think came to a very reasoned decision. I'll just basically cut right to the core, which is on the second page of my testimony. We support the bill with two amendments. One would be to modify the subsection two requirements dealing with confidential business information. The Department of Agriculture has worked out some amendments that clarify what that confidential business information constitutes using a federal code, and also states that confidential information will be kept from disclosure as opposed to may be kept from disclosure. So that's one important change. And the other is one that we are recommending, and that is that whatever this fee may be that is collected, if it's collected, be put into a dedicated fund to be used exclusively for biopharma type operations in the state. We would hate to see them collect a $10,000 fee and wind up spending it on pesticide use reporting or some other type of activity, and then when the need comes to do an investigation or monitoring work on a biopharmaceutical type of operation, there was no funding available.
Okay. Thank you. Mr. North?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. My name is Rick North. I'm the project director of the Oregon Physicians for Social Responsibility's Campaign for Safe Food. And we were the organization that 2 years ago introduced the legislation on biopharmaceutical crops. We've been studying the issue intensively now for 3.5 years. We very much appreciate the efforts of the ad hoc committee also. They put in a tremendous amount of work, and we just very much appreciate that. In terms of the bill specifically, we are very supportive of the intent of the bill, which is to allow for experimentation of biopharm crops, but also protect public health and the environment and the financial interests of farmers and food processors from contamination incidents, which is advocates for public health and preserving the environment. That's our particular perspective. Really like the intent of the bill. We do have concerns also about the language in Section 22A. We just found it very difficult to understand in the first place, but also that it could be misinterpreted regarding confidentiality. So we're involved in the process of rewriting that section. We're giving our input also, and we're very supportive of an amendment or amendments to clarify that language, and we think that would accomplish all these goals.
Very good. I'm sorry you were rushed a little bit at the end there. The bill will be back again. Of course, you'd be welcome to come back again, but I appreciate you both testifying. It's very helpful. Ms. Hansen, when the bill is ready, please get in touch with Sue Marshall so that we can get it scheduled for more time. With that, we'll close the public hearing and Senate Bill 234, and we are adjourned.